Hello and welcome back to episode 3 of the Punch and Pod with me, Sam Brady, as usual, and I'm joined by my good friend, Oscar Pick. How are we, mate, this week?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Just currently, actually, in the process of writing an article. I interviewed boxing world champion Nina Hughes earlier today.
Oh, yeah? How was that? Good?
It was good, mate. Yeah, no, it was good. I'm just going to like include some bits about her story, but sort of talk about the wider issues around women's boxing, really. So I'm looking forward to doing that up. Yeah, what have you been up to this weekend?
Yeah, pretty much the same, to be fair, mate. Just working on a couple of stories. UFC 295 was last night at MSG. And yeah, as you say, I'm just sort of starting the works on an article. Of course, whenever there's a new British champ, mate, we've got to big it up. We've got to promote it. So big Tommy Aspinall doing the business last night. So yeah, this week, UFC 295, MSG, Dana's come out and the numbers for the pay-per-views, they're actually number 1, 2, and 3 now for the biggest pay-per-views at MSG, which is crazy. It was actually the 30-year anniversary that this weekend was the event. And what better way to celebrate 30 years with an English champ, am I right? So we had Pereira and Prohaska topping the bill, and then the co-main was Tom Aspinall and Pavlovic. And we're going to go through just some of the fights that came in and the main, maybe touch on a couple of the others. What I'd normally do, Oscar, and I know we do this with boxing events as well, is start at the main event and go down. But I actually want to do things a bit differently. I think it's only right for us boys to start with the English champ. Tom Aspinall went in there against Pavlovic last night. Amazing, mate. Absolutely amazing. I know you've seen some highlights and things like that. Give us I'll give you my takes on it first, but what did you make of it?
I was really impressed, to be fair, mate. I mean, every time I've seen Tom Aspinall step into the octagon, he's great, just value for money. Like, how often does his fights go beyond the first round? Like, he's just such a destructive puncher. And I think anyone who steps into the octagon with him is just immediately overwhelmed by not only his power, but his speed. Like, for a big guy, he's got such fast hands. And I think Pavlovic obviously struggled to deal with that, where the knockout came early. But as well with the leg kicks, how he set up that shot to actually finish the fight was really impressive. So you can see he's got such a high IQ in MMA, and I think a lot of his striking ability obviously stems from his early days in a boxing ring, where he kind of learned the art of boxing and is now become a really high level operator in the UFC. So he's absolutely doing the country proud. He's smashing it.
Yeah, Joe Rogan, I mean, after the on comms last night, after the knockout, he said he called Tom Aspinall the quickest cat in the division. And I mean, he is. Both of those guys yesterday, Pavlovic and Aspinall, both powerful guys. And the thing is about Pavlovic, no one wanted to go near him. He was on a 6-fight win streak, 6 knockouts in a row. No one wanted to go near him. His only loss in the UFC was his first ever fight against Alistair Overeem. But last night, he went in there against another guy who's an absolute killer. Tom Aspinall's not, I wouldn't say disrespected, because that's not the word, but I think just slept on a little bit. And I think this is because it's kind of, last night, bro, it was his first ever numbered event, first ever pay-per-view event in the UFC, and he's become champ. Do you know how crazy that is? So I think even though he's been putting on stellar performances, he's been cleaning out his opponents, I think from where he was, where he fought Curtis Blaydes and got that knee injury in London and had to be stretchered off, and that was meant to be Tom Aspinall's big homecoming moment and to really put his name out there. And to get that injury, it was a sad, sad ending. But I think now, last night, he's really cemented his place in this division and put his name now really on a global reach where, honestly, this guy, I mean, obviously, both fighters, Pavlovich, Aspinall, 2 weeks' notice. I mean, we go back to the first ever English champ, Michael Bisping. He got in there, 2 weeks' notice against Luke Rockhold, and we all know what happened there. And I know Mike Bisping has been a massive supporter of Tom Aspinall. Mike Bisping has gone as far as to say he believes Tom Aspinall will be the greatest heavyweight of all time. Currently now it's probably argued it's Miocic and DC maybe, but you know, I think Tom Aspinall, he's got the potential to certainly be in the conversation. I think the only problem Tom Aspinall will have now is the John Jones sort of factor now that John Jones has gone up to heavyweight. Because of course this was on 2 weeks' notice. We were meant to have Stipe Miocic and John Jones. John Jones that came out, he tore a pec in training, so that's why these two boys were in for the main event. Dana has sort of come out and said that fight is still the fight to make, the Miocic Jones. And look, like, I probably would agree with it. I think it's one where we probably know what the outcome's going to be. We probably know that Jones is probably going to win, and potentially could be both of their last fights. Both of them could retire after it. But I think for me, Miocic, I think will retire after the Jones fight. I think for Stipe, it's sort of a fight where he looks at it and goes, Stipe is arguably the greatest heavyweight of all time, and Jones is arguably the greatest MMA fighter of all time. So it's sort of a fight you have to do before both fighters walk away from the sport. And from that aspect, you can go fair enough. But for me, I just do see John Jones sweeping the floor with Stipe. I just do. But Tom Aspinall, John Jones, that is a different story altogether. I genuinely think Tom Aspinall has a great chance in beating John Jones. And I know we've said this a lot about the likes of Cyril Gaon. And I know John, I might have mentioned it to you in maybe an episode, or I mentioned it to someone where after the Cyril Gaon, I mentioned it to another mate of mine who's really big into UFC, where Jones put out some tweets after his last fight, after Aspinall's last fight, being like, oh, everyone thinks they're the next guy until they face me. And he's got a point, and everyone does think they're the next guy. We had it with Dominic Reyes and Gustafsson, and now Tom Aspinall is in that conversation. But the fact that Tom Aspinall, bro, he moves. There's no heavyweight. If you were compare this to boxing, I'd say he's the sort of the way he moves, he's like the Tyson Fury of the heavyweight division. He's bouncing on his toes, he's got that stance, but he's so quick and he's so powerful that I really do think Jones would have a serious problem with dealing with Tom Aspinall. Aspinall is so quick, he's so explosive, he's got so much power, and he also showed that he had a chin last night as well, because he got clipped early on in the round with Pavlovich. And probably most fighters, what we've seen from Pavlovich is they go clean out. But Tom Aspinall, he firmed it, he survived it. And that overhand right for the knockout is just incredible. What did you make of the finish? And I know you touched on it, just Tom Aspinall's performance.
Yeah, I think the finish was obviously emphatic. And that's one of the reasons why Tom Aspinall is one of the most fan-friendly fighters out there, in my opinion. You obviously mentioned he got clipped a couple of times, which is bound to happen when you're competing at this level. But the adjustments that he made were really impressive. I mean, his upper body movement to evade a lot of those shots from Pavlovich was really quite elusive. And as we keep saying, for a big 6'5" guy, you don't often see that. Maybe, and I do agree with you, you could compare him to Tyson Fury in a boxing ring, because he's of a similar sort of build and stature, but moves so well. And I know those two are quite good friends outside the ring as well, so there's that little link there. But yeah, I just wanted to go back to the point of the fact that both fighters took this on 2 weeks' notice. And I think it just proves not only to the world of UFC but combat sports in general that if you stay professional, if you stay in shape throughout the year, then when these opportunities come, you can tailor your training to adapt to any opponent in the division. Like, part of a training camp is getting in shape, but if you're already in shape, all you have to do is focus on your opponent for those 2 weeks, just laser focus on them. And then, as Tom Aspinall proves, potentially get the job done and claim a title while you're at it. So obviously that aspect of it, really impressive. And then the performance itself, again, just breathtaking at times. But I would just like to bring up, because obviously now we're talking about the wider heavyweight division, we mentioned that Curtis Blaydes fight. Can you see, if this fight between John Jones and Miocic does go ahead, perhaps Tom Aspinall could entertain the Curtis Blaydes fight, because there's obviously some unfinished business there. What do you think of that?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because they did talk about it after, in terms of, we don't know when John will be ready to fight Miocic. So do we give Tom another fight while Jones is recovering? I think it just depends on him. I think he's made a decent amount of money now. He's the interim champ. I think if he wants to go back to be on vacation, which he was, when Dana called him, Dana said last night that his team came up to him in the cage after the fight and said, yeah, Tom was on vacation when you called. So he wasn't even training. So I think it depends on what Tom wants to do. I think there's that fight with Miocic. I think if John says, look, I need another year, or I need another like 10 months or whatever, I think you could do potentially Aspinall Miocic. I think there's a couple.
What a fight that would be.
Yeah, that, and again, that would be a class fight for both parties. Look, it would be a class fight for Aspinall, because Miocic, a massive name, arguably the greatest heavyweight of all time. But also for Stipe to be like, whether he retires after or not, I mean, if he beats Tom, it's like, look, like, I'm not done. You know what I mean? I don't see it myself. I really don't see that, just because of Tom's speed and his accuracy. But look, there's that fight there. But for Tom now, I think he either waits and for the Miocic Jones fight, or fights Miocic, or fights Jones. For me, you don't think
a Curtis Blaydes fight would be on the table?
Yeah, I could see the argument of maybe doing that rematch. Would I be interested in watching that? Obviously, I'd watch it because it's Tom fighting, but I think he does beat Curtis Blaydes. I know in that fight, he technically lost, but it was only due to an injury. Because I think also it's too big of a risk for Tom to take now. If he's there, he is the interim champ, and now for him to take another fight, there's a fight also with Cyril Garn that could be very, very interesting. Yep.
Then you can draw the comparisons between his performance and John Jones's.
Yeah, exactly. Tom Aspinall and Cyril Garn would be a very, very interesting matchup, because they're very alike in terms of, they're both quick on their feet, they both move like middleweights, like they're both very powerful. So I'd like to see Tom, either Miocic or Garn or Jones, but yeah, it's one of them where the only thing about the Garn fight, which would be like, I'm not sure, is his performance to Jones, where he did just get dominated. But yeah, I think Tom's put himself in a position now that he can now call the shots, and that is the beauty of taking a fight like this on 2 weeks' notice. He said in the pre-fight press conference, he said, "I'm not going to win a belt from sitting on the couch," and it's true. And there was a lot of concerns going into the fight, that a couple of weeks ago we had Volkanovski and Usman taking short notice fights, and they, despite putting up decent performances, did come out with a loss. So I think there was that concern with both fighters, but from an English perspective of, do we want to see Aspinall in there and on 2 weeks' notice potentially risking his future title ambitions? But it went the good way for us. It went the way of, and that is the beauty of it. If it go like we saw with Michael Bisping, if you take the chance, and it might pay off. And I think Dana's always looking for fighters and to say, do you know what? Fuck it. Like, I'm gonna take it, whether I'm training or not. Like, let's just go and see what happens. And it really paid off for him. And I couldn't be more happy for Tom. I really couldn't. You saw the emotion out of him last night. When he won the belt, he was reduced to tears. And I think that heart back to him getting stretchered off and going from the lowest of the low you can go to the highest of heights. And it really puts English MMA. For me personally, I think we're going through a bit of a golden era of English MMA right now. We've got two champs, Leon Edwards, Tommy Aspinall. We've got Paddy Pimblett facing Tony Ferguson, massive name for him, later on this year. We've got Leon Edwards in the next UFC event. I'm sure we'll do another episode after that. He's facing Colby Covington. And if he wins that fight against Colby, he'll start really putting his name he'll start building a roster of names that he's beaten in the welterweight division, that he'll start to be in that conversation. I think we saw similar with African MMA when we had the three African champs of Ngannou, Usman and Adesanya. And I think now, I mean, English MMA is getting so much better, and we're seeing that with Tom Aspinall not only winning the heavyweight belt, potentially, well, in my opinion, Jones is probably going to beat Miocic. So for Tom Aspinall, an English interim champ, to fight the greatest mixed martial arts fighter of all time, I think there's no better platform for English MMA than that, really. So
no, yeah. I think you're right. I think it's really exciting. And obviously, we have to keep reminding ourselves just how young the UFC is and how young MMA is as a sport. I mean, you've obviously just mentioned in this podcast alone a few current fighters that are regarded as greatest of all time in their weight classes. Obviously, you can't necessarily say that for a lot of today's boxers, but it's just a reminder of how these British fighters that we're talking about now, they can just push on and potentially be the future stars of the UFC. I mean, they've got that potential. They've still got the youth behind them. And it's only going to go up and up for British MMA. So as you say, it was kind of Darren Till flying the flag on his own for a bit. And then before him, you obviously had Michael Bisping. But then now, as you say, it's just a lot more in different weight classes. And London will certainly be a huge event. The last few have been massive, but this next one is one that fans can get really excited for, because all of these fighters are now, like with Paddy Pimblett stepping up to fight Tony Ferguson, who's a big name. These guys are now in really exciting fights. So,
yeah, we had obviously a UFC, a pay-per-view event with Leon taking on Usman at the O2. And there was a question in the press conference after last night about Dana doesn't tend to do stadium shows. He tends to he tends to stick with the locations he likes, and he loves the O2. He loves going back to the O2. But someone asked him about that, and I know Paddy's expressed interest in fighting at Anfield. And so yeah, it's the world's the UFC's oyster in terms of English MMA and where they can go with that. And Tom Aspinall, let's remember, his first fight, bro, was in the UFC, was in 2020. So
yeah,
in 3 years, he's rocketed through that division. And same with Pavlovich. And we've got to speak on Pavlovich, because this guy, his first fight was in 2018. And I think it puts also in perspective where sort of the heavyweight division is at the minute. We had Francis, Francis leaving, in a way, leaving the heavyweight division has sort of opened it up slightly. John Jones sort of has now closed the door a little bit on potential shift movements, like shifts and movements on who's going to carry the belt, because obviously John Jones is a very hard man to beat. Unlike the like it's sort of John is now limited options at the heavyweight division, but opened up options. We'll get onto the Prohaska Pereira at the light heavyweight division. But even so, you've got fighters. Yeah, there's a new youth, and Tom Aspinall spoke about this. There's a youth coming up in the heavyweight division of Pavlovich, Garn, Aspinall. There's a lot of these young guys, and a lot of guys also who fight differently from the old sort of stiff and sort of like just fighting a phone box sort of traditional heavyweight scraps as they used to be in the UFC with like Miocic and DC, where they just used to get in there and just throw haymakers, and they're very and slow but obviously amazingly technical. Whereas Tom Aspinall, then this is what I'm on about, his speed and his power. He moves so quick for his weight. And we don't usually, and it's light in boxing where you don't usually see fighters like this. So that's why I think that he would cause John Jones real problems if they fought. And this is the conversation we're starting to have around John Jones now, where what does he do if he beats Miocic? Can he call himself the heavyweight goat if he beats Miocic? I think there's the argument of how can he, if he retires, he's sort of leaving some unanswered questions of what would happen if you fought Tom Aspinall? What would happen if you fought maybe a Pavlovich or whoever, the next guy coming through? I think for Jones to say, look, like, and this will always be the conversation around John Jones. For me, he has nothing to prove. John Jones is for me the greatest MMA fighter of all time, and probably is the greatest probably combat sport athlete of all time. But
ooh, I don't know about that, mate.
Well, he's one of them. I know. It's a bold claim, but he's one of them. And he doesn't have anything to prove. So if he does retire, I can be like, okay, like, fair enough in a way. But it's sort of the similar thing with Usyk, similar thing with Tyson Fury, sorry, where it's how can you retire when there's still some guys left for you to fight? And if you really want to cement your legacy, these are the guys to fight. So you can say, look, I dominated in this era and I dominated in this era. So, look, we don't know when John is going to come back, and he has to get through Stipe, who's no easy task. But yeah, I think this heavyweight division is really really going to be interesting in the next year or so. And I'm interested to see what they do with Tom, because I hope they don't leave him out to dry in terms of him now not being active for like the next year, because I think Tom needs to build on this momentum. I mean, he does need a fight in the next 6 to 8 months. So I think if John does say, look, I'm not going to be ready for another year, and then Dana's like, well, you're still fighting Stipe, then I think you give Tom another fight against a Garn or against whoever. So I think he needs to stay active, and like they've done with Volkanovski a couple of weeks ago, he stepped up on 2 weeks' notice. He lost, but now he expressed, and I don't know if this is a problem in boxing. You might be able to explain a bit better, but Volkanovski highlighted an issue which actually needs to be spoken about a bit more in terms of fighters when they're not active, how damaging that is to their mental health, and when they're not training. Volkanovski was fighting once, twice a year, and he said it was killing him, and he needed a fight. And one of the reasons he took the fight against Islam is because he just, even though he felt like maybe he wasn't his max potential, he just wanted to fight for his own sanity. And I think the UFC and other MMA organizations and boxing, we need to just have this conversation still rolling. And I think the media just need to look, these fighters are human, and if they're not doing their day job, what are they doing? The co-main event in the light heavyweight division, we talked about Jones moving up, which has now created more doors and openings for this belt to spiral round, to be handed off to different fighters. Every fight week, it seems now, it seems that 1 minute Prohaska's champ, then Jamal Hill, and now a new champ, a new king is crowned in Alex Pereira. Wow, this Alex Pereira is honestly, Oscar, a freak of an athlete. He's a scary dude. It's only his seventh fight in the UFC, his 11th MMA fight ever. He's already a two-time division. He's a light division champion. He obviously was a middleweight champ, beating Israel Adesanya in their first fight, and then in their second fight, Israel Adesanya got revenge. But of course, those guys have already fought twice in kickboxing, where Pereira won. So technically, their records 3-1 to Alex. When the UFC, it's 1-1. So there's still that trilogy there. And then Alex went up, and again, I'll go back to what Joe Rogan said on comms, and even I said it before he said it, watching it. This guy's massive. I never understand how this guy made middleweight weight, because this guy, when you look at him, he's huge. He made Izzy, who's a giant, look small at middleweight. So he's a massive guy. And as I said, only his 11th MMA fight ever, and it's incredible. It's so impressive, the quick turnaround of this guy, and the way he's picked up MMA so quickly. He fought Jiří Procházka last night. And Jiří Procházka, look, it's only his he fought Glover. He submitted Glover, which really put his name out there. Yeah, he won the belt. But then he picked up what Dana described as the worst shoulder injury in the sport's history. So he was out for, I think, just over a year. And then he came back and obviously lost to Alex last night. But even with Prohaska, it's only his fourth ever UFC fight last night. He won the belt after his third UFC fight. So, and this is what I'm talking about, where the light heavyweight division and the heavyweight division, you're seeing these new fighters, these new young hungry fighters that Dana, and fair play to Dana and the UFC, going, do you know what, we see potential in you kid, go, like, we'll give you an opportunity straight away and we'll throw you in there in the deep end and see what happens. It was a really good fight. It was a very, very good fight. Pereira impressed me a lot, actually, because Yuri's a tricky guy. Jiří Procházka, he's a very unique character. He's a very unique fighter. He studies MMA and sort of takes the sport very traditionally in terms of, I don't know how to describe it. He sort of, for anyone who doesn't know Jiří Procházka, if you think of the way, the actual art of MMA, he's a spiritual guy, and he's very, And he respects the sport of MMA a lot. And I think, but then when he gets in the cage, he's an absolute killer. He's so technical. He's such an all-round fighter. So he is very good, but he's fresh. And I think it did show a little bit last night, where his layoff through the injury, and then his only fourth fight going in against Alex Pereira, who he knows a killer. Anyone who can beat Israel Adesanya three times like that, we know this guy is unbelievable. And some of this guy's technical work, bro. This guy, for a start, before we even get onto the knockout, the leg kicks Alex Pereira was utilizing against Prohaska last night, where there's no tell of the leg kicks. There's no read for him, which is very impressive. He just whips it onto the calf of Prohaska last night, and that slowed Prohaska down. You could see that he was switching stances, because already within the first first 2 minutes of the fight, that his calf was already swelling because of the kicks of Pereira, and he did that against Izzy as well, I remember. And then the power, getting onto the knockout, the power of this guy's right hook is unbelievable. Again, with his right hook, he sort of has this stance where his hands are sort of out, not really a traditional guard up next to your face, but then he swings this quick right hook, and the power he generates from it is unbelievable. I don't know, did you see the finish and what,
yeah,
what did you make of it? I know there's, we'll get on to the stoppage itself, because I know there was a few question marks around that, but yeah, the actual just technical work of Pereira.
Well, I picked up on a few things. First of all, the commentary team kept highlighting the fact that Prochazka was very sort of unorthodox in his approach. And the fact that he was using all these angles, it was very difficult for his opponents to prepare for that. But I didn't quite see it like that. I don't know if it's because Pereira, from the first round, was landing those leg kicks so easily that he looked like the technician in there. He was disguising those leg kicks so masterfully that I don't think Havska really knew how to deal with that. Like, I'm sure he is probably an awkward customer, and he obviously switches stance, which is a huge benefit in any form of combat sports. But I think Pereira, he showed his IQ in there. He showed his experience. And obviously, we're going to discuss the knockout, but I think the way he set it up was what impressed me the most. Because obviously you've got Prochazka, who's coming forward in straight lines, throwing straight shots, almost falling over his front foot. He looked slightly reckless in there at times. And you've got Pereira, who got caught with the right hand. But as he's backing up, he's definitely got in his mind, like, you could tell he was looking for that short uppercut on the inside. That's a shot that he was setting up, and I think Havska was just open to that. Like, he didn't have the ingenuity or the IQ to actually recognize what Pereira was doing in there, where he was setting up that short uppercut on the inside, which was obviously the undoing of him. So
yeah, his Pereira's right hook is nasty, bro.
What did you make of the stoppage? Because you said.
The knockout itself, Pereira's right hook, it's nasty. I mean, we know this, it's so dangerous. And when fighters get in there, Pereira sort of lures you into a false sense of security where you don't, the right hook's so short that you think surely he can't get
out. That's what he did. He lured him into a false sense of security. Yeah. That's what I was looking for. But it's amazing how he did that. Like, that's such a hard skill to be able to do it in any combat sports. Like, he was almost playing possum in there when he got caught with the right hand. It didn't necessarily hurt him, but he thought, right, let me back up and walk him onto that short right hook on the inside.
The right hook's already knocked out Israel Adesanya twice, once in the UFC and once in a kickboxing match. And again, we're seeing the damage it can cause. It's so short, it's so slick, it's so powerful. In terms of the actual stoppage itself, look, it's one of them where I could see why the ref jumped in, because of the way Yuri sort of fell back and sort of, it did look in a split second that he was knocked out clean, especially when he went back again when he was on the ground. But when Yuri jumped straight back up when the ref jumped in, that's when you can tell, okay, Yuri wasn't like fully, he still had some fighting left in him. And I think because of sort of, he was previous champ, and I think sort of the circumstances of the fight, for me, I'd like to see the ref sort of just let that like manifest for a little bit, let the situation play out and then maybe jump in there. But obviously it was the wrong call in the moment. Like, it wasn't a shocking decision that it was so obviously that he shouldn't have stopped the fight, but it probably was the wrong call. But take nothing away from Alex Pereira. I think Yuri should never have put himself in that position to let the ref jump in. But for Alex Pereira, it's a huge, huge win for him. And this, like I said before about this light heavyweight belt, Yuri had it and then picked up a shoulder injury. And then the belt went over to Jamal Hill, and Jamal Hill beat Glover, I believe. And then now Jamal Hill ruptured his Achilles tendon. So he had to vacate the belt, which obviously left the belt vacant for the fight last night. But he will come back. Jamal Hill will come back and face Alex Pereira. The thing that I found very interesting was we all thought the feud was done between Israel Adesanya and Alex Pereira, but no, he wants it back, mate. Alex Pereira on the mic last night after the fight, he called out Izzy again. I mean, these two are always just going to go back and forward. They've already had 4 fights, 2 in the UFC, 2 in kickboxing. And they're 1-1 in UFC. So I guess technically there's that trilogy there, still there. It's interesting. And what I think the rivalry for me is very much, I think it's very personal to Alex Pereira. That's what I picked up from the post-fight interview. He said he talked about, he said something like, oh, this guy said something about me in a bar. Basically, what he was referring to is, I actually watched this interview when it came out about Izzy basically said, it was the lead up to their first fight, I believe, before Alex knocked him out in the UFC, where Izzy was saying about, oh yeah, Alex has knocked me out and beaten me in kickboxing, but look what I've done in the UFC. Alex is going to be this old man in a bar one day saying, oh, I beat Israel in kickboxing, and he's going to be that salty, annoyed fighter. But then obviously we saw what happened in the first fight where he completely sparked Izzy out, which shut all the haters up. Yeah, he came out and said about that bar interview. And that's why I think it's very, very personal to Pereira. I think he feels a disrespect. I think that just that one interview, but also the rivalry sort of spurs him on to be a better fighter. I think he not only loves the rivalry, I think he likes fighting Izzy. I think Izzy brings the best Alex Pereira out of him. But I also think that comment as well about, oh, you're just going to be this old salty guy, I think that really is a catalyst to be like, no, do you know what? I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to not only beat you, but okay, then maybe lost to him in the rematch, but I'm going to go up a division and then win the belt again. And then he said something like, oh, is he come to daddy or something like that. So you never know. I mean, what I'd be more interested in seeing right now is Alex sort of defending the belt at light heavyweight. Is he figuring out his issues in middleweight? Because he isn't even champ of his own division at the minute. He needs to figure out what he's going to do with trying to get in the way of Sean Strickland. And then there's Dracus Duplessis, who that fight got announced with Sean Strickland. So I think what I'd be more interested to see is he maybe getting back to the heights of his own division, middleweight. Alex maybe cementing himself in the light heavyweight division. And then when they're both at the peak of their powers and they're both respected divisions, I think that's when you make that trilogy. Because I think the trilogy is always going to be there. I think it's a rivalry where you're always going to watch it. But yeah, I think right now you just let it be for a bit, because I think a lot of people at the minute are sort of on the Alex Pereira-Izzy hangover, in terms of we've already seen them fight 4 times now in kickboxing as well. So let them breathe for a little bit. But I thought it was interesting that after one of Alex Pereira's biggest wins of his career, Izzy still in his head and he's still thinking about Izzy. And Izzy did tweet out after that. I think he tweeted like an emoji or he put something like "I'm down" or something. But he has expressed interest of taking a break from the sport for now. So I think, yeah, we'll just see. But amazing work from Alex Pereira to get the belt there, and then a fight with Jamahal Hill next.
There is that rivalry, so obviously you can market the fight around the four previous fights as well. But as you said, it's already a matchup that we've seen before. Mm. Why not? I think Adesanya's obviously will have his eyes firmly fixed on the winner of Strickland versus Duplessis. He left a lot of fans disappointed in that performance against Strickland.
Another fight, maybe just to finish on, I wanted to highlight another European fighter, Son Denon, a French fighter. He had a fight yesterday in the lightweight division. And mate, he put on an absolute show. He wasn't ranked, but the head kick last night was unbelievable. And he called out Dustin Poirier and Justin Gaethje, and I loved it. A guy going in there and saying, "Look, I want the best guys straight away." He won't get it. He won't get what he called out. No. I think that's unrealistic. I think he'll beat him for Vola, who was 14th ranked. He'll go in probably at about 11th, 10th come Tuesday morning. So, yeah, I mean, put him in against maybe the maybe 7th, 6th ranking. You can put him in there. If you look at the rankings, maybe against a Fazeev or a Gamrot, and that'd be a very good fight for him. A very tough fight against those fighters, but I think he's expressed interest to want to fight the best straight away. And it was a very impressive finish yesterday as well. And I know Dana's talked about maybe going back to Paris. They had an event there. Was it this year now? I don't know. 2023 has gone on forever, it seems like. Maybe last year where Cyril Gane headlined. Denon might have been on that card, actually. But yeah, that was a real good scrap. Interesting to see what they do with him. But that lightweight, I mean, he's calling out the top guys in lightweight. I mean, that lightweight division stacked as it is. Never mind. We don't need another prospect coming up. We've got Charles Oliveira, Gaethje, Poirier, Chandler. We've got Chandler McGregor coming the early next year. So, I mean, he's put his name out there, and fair enough to him. We'll see where he gets placed, and then we can go from there. But yeah, that should do it for this week's episode, mate. Unless you've got any more thoughts on the event and anything coming up for the Sports Gazette, any more articles or?
No, happy to leave it at that, mate. I think obviously it's nice and refreshing to talk about the UFC. Obviously, this is a combat sports podcast after all, so we cover UFC and boxing. And I'm guessing there's a few boxing events on the horizon that we can talk about possibly next week. I'm gonna have to have a look at the schedule, but enjoyed today's episode, mate.
Yeah, we've got Leon Edwards, Colby Covington next month, so there'll be an episode out on that when that occurs. Join us next week for episode 4 of the Punching Pod podcast, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye. I love it when you play too hard to get.